Lucy, welcome to 2SER.
Thanks, Matt. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. Now, in your article talking about the kind of factors, you mentioned something called animal spirits and how this influences the price. Can you explain that idea for us?
Yeah, I love that term too when Kelly, my co-author on this article, brought it up. But it's basically the irrational, intuitive motivation for people to buy and sell at particular times in the market cycle. And when you get an investor pile on, like we're kind of seeing with Bitcoin at the moment, the only real reason that you can point to for some of that is that other people are buying it. So they're following other people into the market, and that in itself is sending the market higher.
Is it kind of like a gut feeling? Is that what that means?
It's looking at, say, a horse race and saying, I think that horse is going to win. It's the lucky horse. So it's really just intuitive, irrational things that you can't really explain with a form guide sort of way of analysing the market.
But here's the thing. Is it maybe irrational, but is it influenced by what people see in the media? That particular...
Yeah, I guess if you've got a gut feeling that everyone is jumping on Bitcoin and you're seeing the price go up, then it probably is and probably will. However, it's irrational in the sense that there is no other reason for it except that you're following the market. And, you know, people have acted irrationally in buying and selling stocks and shares since stock markets were existed. So the term that economists use for this irrational behaviour is just called animal spirits.
In the article, you had a plot that I found was really interesting. So it plotted the kind of the Bitcoin price as a function of time, and on the plot you had shown some of the kind of key political events. So have politics been a really big driver for the change in the price of Bitcoin?
Well, politics come into it when you see a national currency plummet in value due to a political event. So when the vote to leave the European Union happened in Britain and you know, Brexit came into being, a lot of people lost faith in the British pound and it plummeted in value, and the price of Bitcoin correspondingly went up around that time or just prior to that time because people were sure that a Brexit vote would lead to a devaluation in the pound. So what Bitcoin is often a hedge against national currencies. If you think, say, the Australian dollar is going to go down by 50%, more people might buy this global currency, Bitcoin, or they might buy something like gold as a safe haven against devaluating or devaluing global national currencies or fiat currencies. So they're relevant just in that because we're looking at Bitcoin as being that global safe haven for national currencies. So there's another point in that graph where Trump takes office and there's a lot of uncertainty about the American economy at that point, and that saw a steady rise in the price of Bitcoin in the following months after he was elected. So we can't say for certain that was the factor that made it rise, but it certainly there were certainly indications that that was the case in terms of who was buying and who was selling it.
So if you'd bought up loads of Bitcoin before Brexit and or Trump, then you would have really won, basically.
That's right. You would be a lot better off now in terms of the value of that coin than what you were prior to those events happening.
You said something interesting just then, that the Bitcoin, it's kind of a hedge against a national currency. As society as technology progresses, is it possible that it could overtake or run parallel to a national currency?
Well, a lot of people are talking about that. I mean, up until recently, the market has been pretty small, under $200 billion in total in the market cap. But in the last 3 weeks, you know, that has doubled. It's over $400 billion now, and it is increasing all the time. So, the amount that's going into it is not enough to challenge fiat currencies at this stage. So it really depends on where it goes from here and what the adoption rate is from here. But potentially, you know, global currencies are here to stay. They are accessible from many different places. People can buy Bitcoin and exchange them country to country, person to person, without going through any central bank or currency exchanges. So there are efficiencies like that. They're obviously useful in some global trading, and there has been a lot of talk, you know, about the origins of, or the initial start for Bitcoin being used for illegal purposes. But really, the first years of Bitcoin were this long proof of concept to say, can this, is this system reliable and robust? Can it be hacked? And the answer to all of that was, yes, it is reliable. Yes, it is robust. Everyone can see what's happening on it. It is very transparent and it can provide provenance. So the underlying technology for Bitcoin, blockchain, is being used in a number of different applications now. But Bitcoin itself as a currency, I think, is just starting to hit the mainstream, or it certainly has in the last week, that's for sure. And more people are becoming aware and more people are jumping onto that wagon. And how long that will continue for, we don't know. But I think the consensus in a lot of economic circles is that we are seeing a speculative bubble. Whether that's a long-term, short-term, and how much the correction will be is all up for debate. We don't know because it's a new technology.
As a side note, it must be tough to be a researcher in this area. Because you're like, if you're up to date,
super fun.
And then you go to Fiji for 3 weeks, and then you come back and everything's changed. That must be, you got to really have your finger on the pulse. Now, also, there's been some stuff in the news which I didn't really understand about the way that the Bitcoin, the way that it's delivered, or the governance is kind of changing. Can you give us a brief explanation about how that would change the price?
Yeah, so Bitcoin is created, mined, and transferred on a particular software. And every now and again, they assess that software and they say, is this working optimally? Can it become more efficient? Is it being starting to be dominated by one or two groups around the world that are mining the Bitcoin? And they, at certain points, there has been proposals to upgrade that software to make it run differently. And when they upgrade that software and to make it run differently, they add a new branch to the blockchain, and that's called a fork or a hard fork. And every now and again, there's a talk about a fork happening, an upgrade, a new way of actually verifying it and making sure the transactions go onto the chain faster. And there was two forks this year. Every time there's talk of a fork, no one really knows what that means. No one knows what that will mean in terms of the supply of Bitcoin.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of nervousness. And then the two that have happened this year have seen drops and then price recoveries, and then it's continued on. So new coins have been created. In the first fork, there was a new currency called Bitcash created. In the second, there was a currency called Bitgold created. But at the same time, they haven't really done much to the price of Bitcoin itself.
Okay. It's kind of complex how the software changes the way that you have Bitcoins or whatever. But the thing is that, I think a lot of people have been exposed to people on social media, and even young people on social media saying, oh, you know, I made $1 million on Bitcoin. And I've always been very wary of things that I don't understand. Is it that really that easy to make $1 million in Bitcoin?
Well, to have made $1 million on Bitcoin, you would have had to buy in quite early. But definitely people who did buy in very early have made a lot of money off it. There was a story that I read in Gizmo, which where a tech writer had bought $25 worth of Bitcoin when they were under a cent each. So, you know, potentially thousands. And he worked out that it was worth, you know, $407 million earlier this year. So it's probably worth a lot more than that now. However, he didn't realize that it was worth that much. And he threw his hard disk away accidentally when he upgraded his computer. So he's been wondering whether it's worth paying someone to mine the garbage dump where the computer might have gone to find the hard disk where that Bitcoin was stored. So, you know, definitely, look, it's a new market. It is highly volatile. There are things that can happen with wallets, you need a wallet to keep your Bitcoin in, or a digital wallet, so they can be hacked or they can be accidentally destroyed, as in the case of that tech writer. So if you're going to go into the Bitcoin market, you know, you need to do a lot of homework and you need to educate yourself. And the other thing to mention there is that it is a completely new technology. So, you know, if treat it experimentally and don't treat it as a way to get rich really quick, even though some people obviously have in the last year or in the last few years.
It's a brave new world where
it is,
a
absolutely.
Discarded hard drive can be worth $400 million. Thank you for enlightening us, Lucy. I think I've certainly learned a lot over the last 10 minutes. So thank you for coming on and chatting on 2SER.
My pleasure.
That was Lucy Cameron. She is a senior research consultant at Data61 through CSIRO, telling us a little bit about Bitcoin and also how the key factors that influence the price.